This evening, what we've decided to do in the teaching team is that we'll both speak some about practice. So I'll try to use the 21st minutes and leave the 20 last minutes to Anushka. And we want to partly tie loose ends, is that the expression in English, where we might have a feeling that there's some things that might be important to name that we haven't named, pieces of the Dharma, aspects of these this philosophy or practices. And I think we wanted the whole team for me to touch a little bit more on the bubbly bubble aspect that I spoke about this morning in the series of images. The bubbles of pleasure and displeasure that arise here and there in our life, or the phenomena also of neutrality, which really exist as part of our experience and meaningful when things are neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So, the standard kind of reaction that we have when we meet these tonality in our lives is, check this out if it's true for you, that when human beings, they meet what is pleasant, often, not always, but quite often, they will get tensed, you know, kind of clingy. Oh my God, it's so good. I want it to last, you know. Will I be able to secure this or produce more of this or get more of this because it's good? And so often it will come with fear or, clinging of some sort. And so it's a stressful way to live, to either search for it, and when we get it, to actually fear that we're going to lose it. And that's why there's the image of the Buddha, of the bubble, I think, trying to tell us, hey, you know, it's ephemeral. So see if you can learn to actually feel these things and allow them also to disappear. So that's the teaching. Often we cling like this. We can easily cling to something that was meaningful or beautiful that happened in the past. Huh? That's absolutely human nature. Understandable, it makes absolute sense that we would. Back then, you know, and we haven't noticed that it's gone, or we don't agree that it's gone, you know. So in the development of wisdom, we learn maybe how to go through the process maybe of grieving. Yeah, it is gone. It's gone. You know, and allow for life to be dynamic as it is, for things to arise and pass. We can do this also with things of the future. We can project pleasure, satisfaction, security, and want it, want to keep it. I find it very poignant how we do this. I have a flash of somebody was teaching here in the hall, I think, a teacher, and was describing at some point having won the some kind of a national wrestling contest. And they got their trophy or whatever they, you know, on the podium, and they said they were like this, like raising their hand, like as the winner of the contest, you know, and they said, as my hand reached the end of its little run here, like this, in the crowd, I saw somebody who was young and upcoming and strong, you know, and the immediate was like, oh no, you know, And they said it was very poignant. For them, it was a kind of an insight, you know, and it's like, I won the national contest. No, this person is going to get me, you know. And so it lasted just a second. It's, to me, it's very poignant. And wow, that's how, is it elusive, the word? How wow, it can crumble. Just the idea that I might lose something already is, yeah. So I remember for me, something that I was kind of hooked on was, and I would do this during the retreats, and actually there's one time I became conscious of it, I was actually sitting in this hall, and what I would do as a person living with HIV and the difficulties around this was to actually take pauses, breaks in the meditation to actually think of my life without HIV, you know, the other life. And so I would sit there and, okay, I've been here, it's difficult being here. What if I, you know? And then, oh, I could do this and do that when I meet people and when I travel with this. And, oh my God, I would feel so free. And I would do this actually very, very regularly. I would spend a certain amount of my life dreaming, hoping, fantasizing in all these ways, you know. And so one time, because there had been mindfulness prior to, you know, I had been attentive, there was a build-up. At some point in the middle of that fantasy, I kind of woke up. And the insight was, first, that it was not reality. You know, it was actually a fiction. It was not what was actually happening. And plus, in my fantasy, everything was pleasant. I don't know here if there's other people who are not HIV positive and if their life is absolutely pleasant from beginning to end. But in my fantasy, like, there was only a succession of, you know, comfort and ease and meaning and richness and, you know. And so I woke up to this and saw the delusion in that creation, you know. And also, every time I was coming back here, it was pretty disappointing, you know. And in that moment, so around that kind of beauty, pleasure, as fantasy, I noticed that it was actually not that helpful. It was kind of made up. It was not reality. And in the way that it touched me more deeply was suddenly I realized that I actually now, not before, but now at this moment, I actually wanted to be engaged with reality. Like, I had a choice here. And it seemed like being engaged with fantasy seemed cheap in some way suddenly. I didn't know that before. I was investing in that. But at that moment, there was a kind of a decision point and or clarity. And there was something really, yeah, kind of clear or deep, or I actually want to commit to life, this life. And there was a turning in terms of energy or vision, or, you know, like, I actually want to be engaged with life, this crooked life, this imperfect life. This is where I want my energy to go now. And there was a kind of a visual of kind of getting married to my life, you know. And I was like, there, are you going to cherish your life, you know? And, yeah, tears, you know. Yeah. From now on, I'm not going to think about other lives, you know. When I go to bed at night, I'm going to cherish this life that I'm in bed with, you know, and in the morning, I'm going to cherish this life. And when I walk in the street, I'm not going to look at others' life, you know. I'm going to cherish this life. And it was actually very liberating. There was a kind of an accepting of the acceptance of the difficulty, the nature, the form it took. And it freed energy that was stuck in you know, dreaming of another version, you know. And so I was hooked on what we call a feeling tone. Vedana is the word in Pali of pleasure, you know. And at other times in my life, like you, I think I've been hooked on unpleasant feelings that are actually not there, like the idea that there might be that situation happening and the eventual unpleasantness or deep displeasure or in this whole range of pain that could be, could spend a lot of time hooked on something that is not, but could be. You know, so it, the insight in there is that we might not need the actual thing, just the fabrication in the mind is enough to keep us bound. Yeah? And so somewhere in the texts, and I think it's not from the Buddha, but from 1,000 years after in the Visuddhimagga, an old, old text, where it talks about how human beings, I'm a little vulnerable, I think there's I've been on retreat also. Actually, we've been on 2 retreats here, so I feel the end, the kind of fragility of the end. And so in one of the texts, it says something, it says, how one can be overpowered by the powerless, And to me, what I'm talking about talks about this, the idea of unpleasantness. I might be totally overpowered by what has no power can overpower me when I'm a little deluded, which makes sense that we would, you know. And so the practice here for me is to clarify this. Oh, this is an idea. It's a production of the mind. It's actually not there. I don't need to be overpowered by the powerless. It's so sad that one would be overpowered by something that has no power except the power we give it in our delusion, in our confusion. So there's a tremendous possibility for liberation there by knowing that a thought is a thought, a fabrication of mind is that, a projection, an anticipation is just that. I think there's some adjustments that we can make in the way we hold things that can be liberating for us. I'm not saying this is easy, but that seems like it doesn't count on that path, the fact that it's easy or not, you know. Is it doable to free oneself from that kind of mistaken, you know? Are you following me a bit when I talk about this? Overpowered by the powerless? This is something I've seen many times in my life, projecting satisfaction on something and needing it absolutely to find out that it was not providing absolutely, you know. And so I had been overpowered in some way by my projections, my putting satisfaction where it's not, or creating things that are not exactly happening right now, you know. It's all very delicate stuff, but we could take this as, matter for further reflection, for investigation, for exploration. Just another little idea around this theme of pleasure, displeasure, neutrality, Vedana, in Pali pronounced in American way. Vedana. Vedana. That's with the French accent. So at the time of the Buddha, there was one very, very wise being. She was called Dhammadina, very respected practitioner. And at some point, somebody is asking her about feeling tone, about that theme, that aspect of our experience. And this person said, you know, tell me something I don't know about this, kind of. And Dhammadina, she said a bunch of things, I think, but one thing that's, to me, has been kind of a really good element of research, I've heard that, and I thought, oh, I actually want to go check it out, and I've spent a number of hours checking this out, is she said, first two things that I thought are extremely kind of both obvious and extremely deep and wise. She said, oh, you know, pleasant, when it ends, it's often unpleasant. And then unpleasant, when it ends, it's often pleasant. I don't know, it was kind of shocking for me to, like, I know it's basic, but it's also deep, you know, like, oh, is this person suggesting that they contain each other? You know, like, interesting, just that, anyway. But after, she says something that I'm going to paraphrase here, but seems like she's saying something like, what is neutral, so it doesn't stand out as pleasurable or unpleasurable, what is neutral when met without mindfulness, without presence, you know, is often unpleasant. And neutrality, something that is neutral, when met with high-quality awareness, often becomes pleasant. And so in a situation like this one here, where there's a certain amount of neutrality, huh? Like we're sitting, we're just sitting, or breathing, you know, breathing for many of us, not for all of us, and at all times, but is often quite neutral. You know, like, oh, I love the breath, I delight in the breath, or I hate, which is actually possible too, but most of the time is just the breath, you know, something quite neutral. And anyway, it's felt like this for me, and when I started practicing, becoming aware of breathing, or sitting, or hearing, were things pretty neutral, but I didn't have much attention, so very quickly it would become disagreeable. You know, like, what do you mean? Isn't there something else that I should, you know, and doubt and wanting to be somewhere else and, you know, aversion towards the practice, you know? And so Dhammadina in the back, you know, neutrality when met with lack of attention is often disagreeable. And then paying attention, suddenly, stepping might become something full, with a full attention, you know, not an attention that is partly wanting to be somewhere else, or, you know, but fully giving attention. And I think many of us have experienced this week, of something extremely simple can become. And anyway, I'm saying this partly because I think, certainly in my life, I felt that I've been able to nourish. I'm saying this, and I'm really thankful that there's many things that were neutral and unseen, would lead to kind of confusion, not met, you know. That now it's more quality awareness, suddenly there's a richness possible in a moment of transition where, you know, in between two things where it's neutral. Suddenly, whoops, I wake up, you know, and I don't know, opening a door, many little things like this where my mind would usually be worrying or projecting in some ways, hooked in some ways that are not helpful for me. Now it's possible to refresh the mind in many ways through little neutral things. The quality of the connection with water running on the hands, you know, and this kind of refreshment gives me energy to actually meet the different challenges. It's extremely small things that turn out to be actually extremely important things, especially if there's something happening that is difficult, to be able to touch on something neutral, recognize that it's happening when I would usually miss it, you know? So this situation is really stressful, but I feel the feet on the ground. So it widened the reality. Instead of being just the reality of this misunderstanding, suddenly there's this too. And the mind can refresh itself a little bit in the touch of the feet. Neutral, but neutral well met is stabilizing. So I'll play by the rules. And this was a few words. We could do a month-long retreat on that particular theme because it's a rich, very rich theme for human beings.
I cede my time to you. You can go on.
Huh?
I cede my time to you. You can continue.
How much time?
No.
No. No, no. So, So one of the things that you might notice when we return to our lives. And it was happening probably here, as also that when we meet what is difficult, so what's the tendency of the mind is to, you know, collapse, you know, become tight, lash out, think something is wrong. So there's a clinging also to what is unpleasant. And it might be Dhammadina or the Buddha or both of them. We say, not only this, when we meet something that is difficult, we close down and get aversive in some way, but also human beings untrained, not knowing what to do with what is difficult, they tend to actually look for pleasure to avoid, you know, so that's their immediate response. So compulsion, addiction kicks in there, you know, bad news, ice cream, you know, or any other things that, and so we can see this in action, how we'll deny what's happening to look for a hit of pleasure because we don't know what else to do, you know. And in the development of practice, we learn actually, and that's what we've been doing here, learning to actually meet what is difficult with all the qualities we've been developing, courage, steadiness of mind, perseverance, patience, determination, all these qualities can come and help us meet what is difficult. There's one teacher, Zenju Earthlin Manuel. Some of you know this teacher. I've been very, very, very inspired by her response to what is, you know, disagreeable, painful, difficult. So she has a book, the title is The Way of Tenderness. And in that, she talks about turning with complete tenderness towards what is difficult. And for her, it's you know, being black in a society that is where white is seen as supreme. You know, it's being queer in a hetero normative environment. It's being a woman in a society dominated by male. And so these profoundly disturbing, painful realities, encounters, situations of invisibility, of projection, a total mistaken projection on one, on norming, aggressive, violent, or quote-unquote subtle normings, you know. So all these things, all these events happening, she describes a response, developing, cultivating a response of complete tenderness, a way to feel, I mean, The Way of Tenderness, that's the title of the book. She does a better job at me describing this. It's actually a teacher that I've read a number of things from, never had the chance to meet, who lives in the Bay Area. And so, complete tenderness, compassion, to me it's still very mysterious, this alchemy of, you know, taking what is hard and having the ability to make it something that is tender, you know, that tenderizes the heart, that becomes a vehicle for awakening in this way. And so here's, you know, how it's possible to meet what is difficult, painful, probably decades of practice, research, exploration. Maybe I'll just finish with so in the development of practice, it seems also that there's a valuing of different kinds of pleasure. We already have that in our lives, but the pleasure of at the sense doors is one kind of pleasure. And there's another kind of beauty or richness, to use other words, that comes from kindness, for example. So it's a different, more subtle kind of generosity, honesty. So there's a whole field of feeling tones, of pleasure, displeasure, and neutrality that are very wholesome. I'll name like a kind of displeasure that is onward leading. So if I've done something harmful to somebody and I'm able to have the feedback loop open so that I can feel, become aware that there was hurt done, and if I don't fall in the trap of guilt, self-hatred, and not in the extreme also of denial or irresponsibility, but right there in the middle, the feedback loop of feeling the repercussion, the echoes, there's been harm done, you know? So this is unpleasant, no? But it's known to be one of the guardians of the world or of ethics. And so in practice, we learn to actually feel the displeasure of spiritual remorse, we could call it. And so be visited by this displeasure, knowing that it will be onward leading. Yeah. But it's tricky, because it could is also be the displeasure of guilt, guilt tripping, like Tara talked about yesterday, kind of a shame that has hatred in it, self-hatred. And so one is entangling, self-hatred, and one is liberating. If there's something that I have done and I'm able to feel the repercussion, whoa, mistaken way to talk or to act. So some of these thoughts around the pleasure, displeasure, neutrality, that is a river flowing in our life constantly, that is worth taking, becoming interested in. Okay. Thank you for considering all this. Is it? You think? You could go longer, but... You think it's enough? Okay. So did you feel... You know, if you left because there was a pleasure that appeared, it did this wave, bubble-like thing. It's alive in this way. And in the next, so we'll take about half an hour now to maybe walk in the evening and just notice the variations, you know, in that experience as it's happening and the way it's met tenderly or fully. Okay, that's the form it took.
Just sit for 10 minutes.
Yeah, we'll sit for a few minutes then. If you want, notice if there is the presence of a pleasurable phenomena as you're sitting here. In the body or in the environment, the coolness, the sweetness of the night. You recognize something of that nature, see if you can be allowed, if you can be known simply, directly. In the same way, if there's something happening in the heart or anywhere else in your experience that is disagreeable, notice if the mind is contracting around this, rejecting, or if it's able to allow it to be there. Pain, tension, or unsettledness of some sort. Or it might be that things are quite neutral in there. Does it make you want to depart or Does it lead to confusion? Why are we doing this? Nothing's happening. Is it possible to touch or be touched by a phenomena that is neither pleasant nor unpleasant? Can we be in the devastated heart? With a calm presence, caring presence. Can we be in a beautiful mind state? Without trying to keep it or own it, just experiencing it fully. If not much seems to be happening, can it be okay that life took this form right now? Can it be experienced? One teacher said, the mind, the heart are vast. In there can come armies, butterflies, or nothing.